Welcome to Stir the Pots, finally.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Finally, yeah.
We've been watching each other tweeting away over here, and I'm following all your important updates on sourdough, and everybody's just going rampant and crazy about talking about what you've been writing about.
Yeah, I think, lately that it has been more and more a topic, a very important topic. For me, it's my work, it's my job, but I'm very surprised to find so many people around the world so interested.
Yeah, really. Yeah, there's a real renaissance in baking. It's pretty amazing.
True, very true.
Well, let's start with how did you become a pastry chef / baker blogger?
Ooh, that's become a pastry chef was from my family, my mother. Our family is from a farming background. My grandfather and grandmother, they keep cow, and we had a farm living in a mountain. And so naturally, the generation of my parents was going into, you know. People tell them, don't be a farmer, it's not the future. And then my parents try to do something else, and then, but for us growing in this environment, we learn what was food, we learn everything, and everything at home was homemade, meat, bread, jams, anything, and so. Probably left a big impression on me because I thought, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to bake. You know, I want to make things I can eat. It's so good. And I mean, working in Switzerland, you probably know it's not the best place to expand yourself, to develop yourself. So I went abroad and traveled a little bit around the world, and at some point, I ended up here in Hong Kong. And everyone was talking about doing blogs, and I mean everyone is doing blogs and Twitter and Facebook, and I never really joined these new things and. Until actually one year ago, on the 12th of July, it's 1 year. I joined Twitter and Facebook and blogging, and I think the best thing that ever happened through these things is meeting people like you, like Azalea, like, you know, Carl, and we are all around the world, but we have the same. Great passion for baking and pastry and food, basically.
It's a small world, but in a larger medium.
It is. Yeah, we're connected through cables, but we have a very tangible passion for food, right?
Definitely. And what is your favorite? Pastry or bread?
My first love is bread. My wife can hear me, but it's bread. I love chocolate. I love pastries, cakes. I mean anything. I love it. But to me, the life which is in bread. I mean the development of the dough is just incredible. Uh-huh. And knowing that it's alive, I mean a pastry cream is not much to talk about, you know, but bread dough is just incredible. So that will be my main thing, yeah.
And what do you think it is about bread that intrigues so many people? What is it? Is it from making the dough? Is it all the different steps to creating the final product? Or is there something more spiritual about it that makes it important?
I think it's a bit of everything. I think, like you said before, there is a big movement around the world of people trying to come back to real bread, sourdough, long fermentation, good crust, good flavor. And to me, it's, I mean, I hope and I cross finger that it's a movement that will extend to other things, to vegetable, to fruits, to jam, and that we will go back from before the Industrial Revolution, when everything became faster, quicker, and insipid, no flavor anymore, no art into the food. I really hope it continues. So yeah, I think very important.
Yeah, it's interesting because I notice, I mean, especially in New York, you know, we had an immigrant community that came here, I guess, you know, at the time of my grandfather coming to America from Russia. You know, you had bagels, certain kinds of breads and things. And in some ways, those are being lost, traditional breads. And, you know, it's hard to find the people that hold on to that magic and pass it to the next generation, because a lot of people today don't want to do that hard work.
Yes.
So how do we keep from losing that? I mean, aside from having people blogging about it, are there still, like, people that are going to hold those sacred recipes and pass them on?
I think two things very important. I think one is to talk about it. So today's media really help, like all these social media and blogging. So talking, and the other one is making it interesting and making it motivate the people. And not like some people write, oh, I've been trying to make a sourdough for 10 days, but it didn't work. And to actually help them share. I mean, there is no, I think to say secret recipes is not something which is from our period anymore. I think before, I mean, maybe 20 years before, everybody had this recipe, and it's probably still the case in many places where they put patents on recipes. But I think, like for me, when you start to write a book, I'm very happy when people use my recipe or copy my work, and I'm very, very glad I can help people carrying on these methods, and I think it's one of the most important points. I just think if we just post photos and just talk about it and say, oh, look how nice we can do this, but we don't actually share more, like we also do every time we can here in Hong Kong, we try to do baking class for people. Right. And not only for professional, but just anyone who is interested. And every time we have a full attendance, we have like if we say 100 people, it's gonna be 100 full, and within a few days there is a huge interest amongst people.
A lot of people have this perception that if you're like say in Hong Kong or somewhere, that they don't eat the same sort of things like or bread. But it's integral, I think, in each society that bread is. Really, in each society, wherever you go around the world, in different forms or what?
Yeah, very true, very true.
Especially in Asia, because I've seen a lot of great Japanese pastry chefs and things and
yes.
Bread books that are just amazing. I mean, they're just like indescribable how great the stuff looks.
Yeah, the Japanese bakers, they are extremely, like they will take a croissant or baguette and then really nail it down until, and it's so precise with 0.01% in recipes, and it's so perfect. It's really incredible, and like you say, in all countries or in like in Asia or Europe or anywhere, there is bread. And if it's in different form, like I was in India 2 weeks ago, and then over there it's all naan breads and flat breads. And it's extremely interesting to discover. And you can relate to what you do as a continental baking. I mean, Western bread, and then it's somewhere it's the same. There is a fermentation or not, and then there is yogurt, and I mean, yeah, it's everywhere.
The thing is too that I find, especially here, is you know we have our certain lines of bread that you only see the same things. You know, you'll have your ciabatta, your baguette, this bread, that bread, and that's it. So it doesn't move on to the next level of like, hey, let's try this, like rye, for instance, in the United States is pretty much a lost art.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah, because it never really reached America, I think, to make real, I mean, save for the like Jewish rye bread, but which is, you know, a mix of wheat and rye, rather than like German breads or, you know, breads from the Northern Europe. So I'm wondering, how do you pass on these kind of breads to make it more available in different countries, or when you travel to countries, say India or something, what do you take from those places to incorporate into what you're making?
Ooh.
It's a big question.
Yeah, it is. It's very
kind of general and big.
No, I think like when For us as professional, I mean, we are lucky to work in a, I mean, for our team, we work in a big hotel and we have different restaurants. And so we have to produce many different bakery items from breakfast to dinner. And because we have a certain recognition on the market, then when we introduce sourdough rye bread, for example, like you mentioned before, and then we meet with passionate people, like really people who come very often, and then we meet with them, talk with them, and then we explain. We say, you see, this is rye, this is made on sourdough, this is how it's supposed to taste. And so we try to pass on the message to create sort of awareness. I wouldn't say maybe education, but at least an awareness of what real rye bread should taste like, or what is spelt, or what is kamut. You know all these things that are lost. I mean, in many countries around the world. So passing on the message through to people, but I mean this goes just one by one, you know. And it's very hard, yes. You know, when I first started sourdough here at the hotel, it was difficult to have my team of bakers to understand what was happening, and when they eat bread and it tasted sour, and so they say, oh, this is not too good. And after a while, it became normal. And today, when they go to eat in a bakery outside the hotel, and they try bread, and they say, "Oh, this is no good.
It has no flavor."
So now they actually change, because what we do as a crust, as a flavor, as a texture, and what's in most of commercial small bakeries is direct 3 hours dough, and it's just, they call it aeroplane dough here.
Like airy, puffy, white stuff.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. That's another misnomer too, because I have a lot of people asking me, I don't like sourdough, it's too sour, and you're like, but it's not sour, it's a bacterial leavening.
Yes,
it doesn't have to be sour, you can control it.
Yeah, like in beer, right? There is a sourness in beer too, but it's from the fermentation.
Yeah.
Or there is an acidity in wine, and it's also from the fermentation.
Yeah, exactly.
We you know, I've been blogging about this lately, and it's I mean we adapt our bread to the market here, and we do a refreshing of our sourdough every 8 hours, and when we need the last the dough, we add a little bit of fresh yeast, and then we put it in the fridge, 18 hours, and that way we have actually to balance the acidity, the crumb, the texture, the crust we wanted, and it's not like, you know, really strong sourdough, and you know, like purely on sourdough, and we had to do that to adapt to the people here.
Yeah, to the palate.
Yes, because like you said, if we were to give them like a real pure sourdough, probably they will say, oh, that's too sour, or that's too tough, or blah blah blah, and so we adapted like that. But you know, at least we are there, and it's a very nice product.
Well, I actually have a question from Dan Laporte in England for you, and he wanted to know: is it easier or more difficult baking in a European style in Hong Kong or a French style?
Actually, we had to import the flours we use. So we actually use French flour and Japanese flour, and a mix of both. And the quality of what we do is it's as workable as in Europe.
Right.
We have no specific issues. It's just that you need to consistently have the import of the product.
Right.
But technically, it's the same. There is no challenge here. As a matter of fact, the croissant or the baguette we bake, we were told by the like some big shots from the Michelin guide who told us our bakery product tasted very, very good, as good or not better than some from Paris. So we felt very proud, and we were like, oh wow, this is a great achievement for us. I mean, we don't know what's over there, so we were very proud.
I guess the flour helped, but it was more the skill, I think.
Yes, I mean, of course, you are very right. In bread, ingredients is very important, but the technique is extremely important. Yeah,
definitely. What is your favorite confection or pastry or bread that you like from Switzerland?
That would be simple. That's my my mother's apple tart.
Ah, okay.
So, that would be for pastry. And she's doing it's just a flat pâte brisée.
Right.
The dough is a pâte brisée with a cream of almond, and the apple is the apple from the neighbor's orchard.
Right.
And that's what make it so good.
That it's local and terroir and from mama's hands.
Yeah, it is. So it just tastes so good every time. It just, and you cannot do it here because we don't have the products, and it's just about the ingredients. And for bread is actually rye bread. The rye bread we bake at our village. That's like what was baked centuries ago in the four banal of the village, in the wood fire oven. Back then they used to pass the mother dough from family to family, you know, and everybody has a month to bake his bread or something like, I'm not sure the period, and then they pass it on to the next family. And it's big loaves of rye and very hard. They could keep it for a few months. And basically, when they eat it, they soak it in a soup or they soak it in a coffee. And I think many countries actually have this kind of tradition. There is very little salt in it, yeah. And it's mainly is the sourdough gives the flavor. In 2 weeks' time, I'm going back to Switzerland, and I've organized a baking session in the traditional oven.
Oh wow!
with the village association that take care of the oven, because of course nobody use it anymore,
right?
Except for entertainment, basically.
So you'll be entertaining some people then.
Yeah, or myself, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've been noticing everybody sort of tweeting about your articles, and I was reading them the other day, and I'm wondering what your whole idea is about this no need or less kneading and folding methods, because for me, it's like if your hands aren't in the dough, you're not making bread. It's kind of like you're just watching something grow by itself and not helping it.
Yeah. So maybe I won't have much friends after I said it to you, but anyway, here we go. It's to me, the no need and no work bread machine, 5 minutes a day thing, and all of that, it's great for home, housewife, and it probably goes into what our society has developed in today, where you're so busy with work that you don't have time anymore to do things the proper way. Yes, when you make a dough and you keep it in your fridge for a week, it's fine. It's probably fine for home, you know, to do that. And yes, you can say you're baking. If you're a business man or woman and you never baked in your life and you're doing that, I mean, you probably feel like you're Gaston Lenotre or someone, you know, like, oh wow, I bake bread. But from a commercial or professional point of view, these methods are not. They are not. They are right, but they are not right for commercial use. If we knead a dough for 10 minutes in a slow speed and 6 minutes in a strong, it's because there is a need. If we do an hydrolysis of flour, there is a need and there is a reason behind. And results have been analyzed and results have been shown different, right?
Right.
The effect of the kneading, the heat, the swelling of the flour with the water, and the friction, the rheology, all of this has been studied, and there is a reason why we do things in a certain way. And I don't think it's being a, how you say that, like a conservative, old-fashioned baker to talk like this. It's just that we want to achieve the best product we want. The best product we want to achieve, and there is a way to do so.
Right.
So that's what I think.
And I guess time honored tradition does mean something.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean tradition and I mean sourdough or classic baking or poolish or 24 hours fermentation, all this has a sense, and I mean, yes, you can say it's real bread when you get a cube of bread out of your bread machine in the morning, but it never appealed to me. I mean, I don't understand the people say, oh wait, yeah, it's great, the bread come out fresh at 7 o'clock in the morning, but it's just,
it's a cube of bread.
Yeah, and it doesn't appeal to me. It's probably because I'm a purist or like a very hard-headed person when it comes to bread.
Right.
I think.
Well, speaking of purists, there's a lot of people who would just say just sourdough, no yeast at all, and you know, some of them say, well, it's if you put yeast in the sourdough, it's hybridized dough. So what's the reason for putting just a bit of yeast? Is it a control factor, or is it necessary, or can you just do without it completely?
Of course, you can do without, and we also do without. And it's like I said before, I think there is nothing wrong with using fresh yeast. And you can do some bread which are only on based on fresh yeast, and then 24 hours fermented in the fridge, and the next day you shape room temperature proof and bake. And I mean, if you are talking and you are claiming to your customers you are selling sourdough, then yes, of course, it's pure sourdough, and you are not using a powder from which is dried sourdough, and you are not using yeast or dry yeast or whatever. And then yes, no problem. From our side, for example, for our restaurant, like I said before, it's to adapt to the local palate, because people will not like to have it too dense or too sour, and we add actually 2 grams of yeast per kilo of flour. Uh-huh. And so over 18 hours, it does the job it has to do. And yes, it you cannot say it's a pure 100% sourdough, but it we still work, we still making real bread. I think it just depends on your ego, your self-baking ego. If you want to say I'm a purist, I will never touch yeast. Or if you say, why not? You know, if the result is right, why not using it? So.
Yeah, well, I've come to the conclusion that when I don't have the sourdough around and I want to bake something, pull out the dry yeast and, just give in to the necessity of having to bake something, and it'll be a little different, but it's bread, you know, you do notice the difference in the flavors and the quality, of course.
Yeah. Of course, there is a big, another big difference, but there is definitely a difference. And I think if you know how to handle it properly, when you if you use dry yeast and you make for example a poolish, uh-huh, and you conduct your dough in a way like a proper way, I mean, you're gonna take 9 hours to pull out bread from the oven, and you use dry yeast, but the result at the end is excellent.
Yeah, I actually made bread in Canada like that. I made a overnight poulet. It was cold enough in Canada to make it a very slow rise, and I had, mm-hmm, this wonderful flour, semolina flour. I made this incredible bread, and I was even shocked at the taste. I was like, wow, it really tastes good, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if it's done like that, I mean, there is nothing wrong. To me, the wrongdoing in bread is really the chemical additive to like the mold killer or emulsifier,
right,
or like the things that make it possible to keep square bread in a plastic bag for a week. You know, these kind of things. I don't know what it is, and. I just think this is wrong using that.
Or even like a ascorbic acid. I think a lot of people are kind of like, oh, that's horrible, don't put that in there.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of acids. There is probably some that are natural.
Yeah.
And I mean, after, it just depends, like I say, your belief, your ego, what you want to achieve, basically.
Not only are you a baker, a pastry chef, a blogger, and author, you're also a philanthropist. Can you tell us a little bit about that side of your work?
No reason. It's just I enjoy a lot to go and join charities and help people. And the one that really started me was Giving Bread, this association from Celine, which I met because she approached the hotel for, she's actually collecting bread that was extra produced in hotels and restaurants around Hong Kong, and then she goes to visit elderly poor people and she distributes the bread. So it's all done in a very hygienic manner. There is no, and it's not like it was on a buffet and we pull it back. It's something that was produced and not used. And every day, at our hotel, it was going to the canteen, to the staff canteen. You know, we have 900 employees, so there is many mouths to feed. But actually, it made a lot of sense when Céline came to us and she said, she talked about this project. And then, you know, I thought the people, the poor people in the streets or the elderly, they need it more than us in the canteen. We're all fat anyway. I mean, at least in the kitchen, we have no food issues. But it made a lot of sense, and so we give bread to that association, and then I also join them. So far, I only joined them once because I didn't have time, and it is actually so rewarding to go on the field yourself and to see what happened. It gives you a slap in the face and reminds you who you are and how lucky you are with what you're doing today. And it just pressed the reset button, you know? For that day, press the reset button and then you're like, wow, okay. Back to
the ground.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, back to reality and, you know, think about what's happening in the world. And so ever since after that, then there was other charities approaching me, and I thought it was great to give them a hand for youth with problem, I make so many now. But Best Buddies, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Best Buddies was also very, very rewarding, and it makes you become simple. Not that I'm not simple, but it makes you humble. It's a very humbling experience, and especially it's always related to food and people, and it's very connected, you know. There is a sense between food and people, and there is a connection. And us being chefs, and it all comes together. And I think it's just beautiful.
That's good. And you've written how many books so far?
Oh, that's the fourth one is coming out on July 20.
And it's about bread?
It's about bread, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And very nice.
Yeah, I've got two of your books, so I'm pretty happy with them. I have to get my I have to sink myself into them and start making your bread, because every time I turn the page, I said, "Oh, I want to make that one. I want to make this one." What is your favorite bread? Is it rye? Is it wheat? Or
I think it's rye bread. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good rye sourdough.
Okay.
I think, and toasted,
uh-huh.
And sliced, toast, and then whatever, if it's savory or sweet, butter, I mean, anything that goes on top, and then it's just perfect.
What advice do you give to budding pâtissiers and boulangers to get into the business of pastry or bread making?
You mean to...
To start.
What to say? To young people? Or?
Yeah, what's your advice? How do you begin getting into the business?
The first thing is you need to know if your heart is ready to go into this, you can do it. If your heart say maybe, just don't do it because it's too hard. It's not easy. And you're going to have to work from the bottom up. So you know, you have to go through a lot of things you don't necessarily
expect.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
You will be very upset sometimes, and you will cry, and you will want to give up many times. So if your heart is not ready to go into this trade, don't do it. But if you are 100% sure, then you find a very good teacher, a very good place to learn. And a good place doesn't mean a name with stars. A good place means where things are done the right way, the basics are done the right way, because that's the foundation of your future. You once you know all your basic, and then you can play, then you can create, then you can do whatever you want. But it has to start from the basics. I don't think you, if you go do an apprenticeship in a molecular restaurant only, and like you spend 3 years in a molecular restaurant, you won't. You are not going to know your basics, and so I think you really need to start with the basics.
Sure. And what inspires you daily?
What inspires me is nothing.
Nothing.
It's I go to work, we get market lists from our suppliers, and then it says peach, apricot, cherries, and then I'm like, wow, it's in season, let's do this, let's do that. It's basically about ingredients that are in season, that inspire me. I wouldn't say what inspire me is the challenging myself.
Uh-huh.
Because especially when you write books or when you evolve in a 5-star hotel with a lot, in a city with a lot of competition, with all the big names around you, you cannot settle for what you're doing today. And it's just natural, it's just normal that every day you go and you challenge yourself. And it doesn't mean to go into new techniques. Of course you need to learn and you need to know what's going on. But it means to take different approach or to work a product differently. And so this is what inspire. Like, you see what other people are doing with apricots or cherries. You look what's happening and then you think, wow, look, these people are very smart. They've done that with cherries. And then this is where you need to think and have a vision of what could be done with these or that ingredients.
Right.
So that's how I get inspired or motivated. But it all comes from insanity or craziness, maybe. I don't know how you call creativity. it just comes out of the mind.
Where do you look back for your reference, your base? Is it from your training, or do you just look at other people's things and change? Or
the basics, I look at my school book.
Uh-huh.
From Switzerland, and then tweak the recipes around, change, modify, and if you think it's too dense, if you think it's too sweet or like that, but the basics are always right. So yeah. It's basically my apprenticeship books or recipes from the small shop I made my apprenticeship in Switzerland, and it always work. So like you know all these basic, but after it's how you use them, how you put them on a plate. You just need to be to have your mind in there. You know, it's sure. After it's the creativity you give it to.
Do you just work on something, different recipes daily yourself or with your team and then develop as you go along? Or do you just like, let's do this today and let's put it together, see what happens?
Basically, what we do is with my assistant, we talk a lot. We read magazines, we read books, we go places, we try food. We get new samples of ingredients, things we never used or like that, and then we draw a sketch, a lot of sketch of the shape we want to do, and then after we do it, we are both doing the samples, the actual food, and then we eat a whole piece of the thing to know if it's really comfortable to eat, or if after two spoon you want to crawl on the floor, you know. That's often I think that's often a mistake from chef, where you just dig a spoon or a finger in your recipe and say, well, that tastes good, but you know, how about a whole plate of it?
From start to finish.
Yeah, from start to finish, it has to be good. And that's basically how we work. But you know, we have many restaurants and many menus going on at the same time. So we have to look at breakfast, at lunch, afternoon teas, coffee breaks, dinner, overnight things, and so it's a lot going on, and we need to come up with a lot of ideas all the time.
And it can be hard sometimes being a chef to make something that's for your guests when it's in your mind as a cook or a chef. Sometimes it has a really chef kind of perspective rather than a guest, you know. So how hard is it to transcribe that to the what the people are going to eat rather than, oh, it's like a cook's food, you know? You know, we chefs have a good appetite and a good idea, like, oh, I really like this. So how do you make it more inviting to the guests rather than it being something for cooks, per se?
You are right. We that's very funny you say that. But we try a typical example when we design our afternoon tea pastries. We put ourselves into a woman's shoes. not literally, but we think who are our customers, and we see our pastries through the eyes of the ladies who come for afternoon tea. So we think how they think, you know. They like light colors, purple flowers, this and that flavor, because they are 99% of the guests of the customers.
Sure.
So that's how we think. We think. And we do the same when we have high-profile events with, wine house coming and hosting a dinner. They tell us, okay, we need a dessert that match this wine and from this year, and we try and we blah blah blah, and so at the end we know what they expect, and we work this way.
Uh-huh.
So we really think through the customer's mind to design the product. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to keep you up all night because I'm sure in the morning you'll be busy making something new for your guests and keeping busy.
Yeah, we'll be. But thank you very much for the interview. It's
and thank
great
you.
Pleasure.
I'm looking for your to your new book too.
All right.
Yeah,
I will send it for you.
Okay, and enjoy Switzerland. Say hello to my sister for me.
I will, from the train.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.